Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 103 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Adam, and I'm all by myself today. Jill is working from home, so you've just got me for the introduction. Little peek behind the curtain as usual, just to let you know how my life is going. It's about 7 a.m. on Friday, and I did not sleep last night. And the reason is twofold. One, when I got home last night, my wife and I went to our local theater, Playhouse Square in Cleveland, which we've talked about a lot of times. Playhouse Square is awesome. It's one of the biggest theater districts in the country, actually, I think just behind New York City. And they have truly incredible shows that come in all the time. And what's currently showing in Cleveland is The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is from the book of the same name. And I couldn't, after I saw this production last night, I just couldn't go to bed. I couldn't stop thinking about it. For those who are unfamiliar, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime is a book told through our main character, Christopher's point of view. He's 15 years old, and it's never specifically said what type of what is going on with him, but it's pretty clear by the way that everything is designed and the way that the book is written that I think he's on the autism spectrum, or perhaps he has Asperger's. But what they do for the production of the play is it's basically like you're inside his mind. So what the purpose of this play is he's trying to discover. In the opening scene, he comes across a dog who has been murdered, and he wants to find out what happened. So a few things about him. He very much dislikes the colors yellow and brown, and he doesn't like being touched. And so anytime any of those things are on stage, the entire set design goes chaotic, and there's all these noises and bright lights, and it's designed to put you inside of his mind. And it's unlike anything I've ever seen before. And I could justify talking about it on our podcast because it is based off of a book. I can't stop thinking about it. It's been a little over 10 hours since we got home from this, and I haven't stopped thinking about it or talking about it with my wife ever since. So this is all of this is to say, if you have a chance to see The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, I highly recommend you do. It's touring around the country right now. But more importantly, just in general, if you have a local theater company, even if it's not something as expansive as what we have here in Cleveland with Playhouse Square, go support your local arts. It's so important. It's such a wonderful way to get a new perspective on things. And just, you know, I can't stress this enough. If you have a chance, you know, go see a play, go see a musical, go see a one-man or one-woman show. They're all just absolutely fantastic. So, and then when I got home, the college that I went to grad school at, Xavier University, was playing in their Sweet 16 game, which they ended up winning, and that didn't start until, I think, 10:45. So all this to say, I'm very sleepy, haven't had coffee yet, and I'm by myself, so things are getting a little loopy in here. None of those things has anything to do with what our actual podcast is about today. Today's actual podcast, you know, the meat of our episode, is an interview I did with Brad Rica, who's actually a local author. He's around Cleveland. He teaches at Case Western University, which is a very well, not established, a very impressive university here in Cleveland. And he has written a book called Mrs. Sherlock Holmes, The True Story of New York City's Greatest Female Detective and the 1917 Missing Girl Case That Captivated a Nation. That is the whole subtitle. And in fact, he has a few jokes in our conversation about how long that subtitle is. Mrs. Sherlock Holmes is a, it's kind of like a, let's call it a narrative biography. It retells the incredible true life story of Grace Humiston. She was a New York lawyer and detective who solved famous cold cases. And the one that it focuses on is the disappearance of Ruth Krueger. She was an 18-year-old girl, and this happened in 1917. A lot of life, or a lot of things happened in Grace's life that were very unique and incredible. She became the first female U.S. district attorney, and she made groundbreaking investigations into modern slavery. But her story is one that kind of got lost in time. We talk about some of the different reasons why we think people don't know as much about her as you should. And then we also have a lot of fun. Brad is a big fan of comic books, so we talk Comic-Con and his favorite comic books. We talk a little bit about Cleveland and all sorts of really great stuff. So I think you guys will really enjoy this episode. Let us know what you think. You can always do that by sending us an email at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com, or you can shout out at us on Twitter at probooknerds on the tweets. Also want to ask, we don't do this too often, so I think I'm allowed to do it just once here. If you have a few seconds and you haven't done this yet, if you could go into whatever app store it is that you use to listen to the Professional Book Nerds, whether it's iTunes or you use Stitcher or iHeartRadio, whatever you use to listen to our podcast. If you're enjoying it, if you wouldn't mind going in and giving us a 5-star rating and just a quick review, it helps other like-minded, wonderful book nerds find our podcast. So, yeah, you know, just in exchange for all of the book recommendations and all that good stuff, if you wouldn't mind giving us those 5 stars, we'd greatly appreciate it. Okay, I'm not going to sit here and chat by myself any longer. I'm going to go get a cup of coffee and try to wake myself up. So just to recap, make sure you support your local arts. Go see a play. Go see a musical. Go see any version. Go to a museum, anything. Yeah, I imagine the types of people who are enjoying our podcast and getting book recommendations also probably enjoy those types of things as well. So that's very important. And then also very important, take a listen to this interview with Brad Rica, and then definitely check out Mrs. Sherlock Holmes. It's an incredible story that I think more people definitely need to be aware of. All right, that's all I've got, and I hope you enjoy this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. Hi everyone, this is Adam from Team Overdrive, and today I'm joined by I'm joined with Brad Rica, who teaches at Case Western Reserve University here in Cleveland, and is the writer of Superboys. He's spoken about comics in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Christian Science Monitor, and NPR's All Things Considered, amongst other places. His latest book, Mrs. Sherlock Holmes, tells a fascinating story of an important female historical figure whose story has kind of been lost in time, and we'll touch on that in just a little bit. So, Brad, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So can you maybe get started just by giving our listeners a little bit of an introduction to your book, Mrs. Sherlock Holmes?
I think somebody's in trouble.
Yeah, that's the nature of having a podcast at a
As long as it isn't me, it's like the old, when I went to school, they had the speakers on the walls.
Oh, yeah.
And it would be like, you know, Brad Rica, please report to the principal's office.
And then everyone's like, ooh, uh-oh.
Yeah. And it would, but, it would be awesome if I was in trouble, but it was really, you know, your mom is picking you up for your orthodontist appointment.
Oh, man, that's really funny. Yeah, there's always those awkward times where you have to do that walk of shame. Like, that's like first walk of shame anyone has to do is when they hear their parents are at the library, the principal's office for them. So
Your parents are trying to pick you up anywhere. But anyway, So Mrs. Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
Just the sort of thumbnail sketch is, this was a nickname given to a woman who was a lawyer and also a detective in turn of the century New York City, which sounds very romantic and very dark, and it kind of was. Her name was Mary Grace Humiston, and she was this lawyer who took on cases of the poor, of immigrants, and kind of all these lost cause cases,
right,
and reverse death penalties, and all this really cool superhero stuff. And so, but she's been lost to history. So with this book, I try to kind of bring her back,
mm-hmm,
and look at some of the cases she did and solved, in particular, this really important, really sensational missing girl case, mm-hmm, that happened in 1917 when an 18-year-old girl named Ruth Krueger disappeared,
mm-hmm,
and she took the case.
And I have to say, this is a person I was completely unaware of before I started looking through stuff to, you know, before our chat here. So how did you come across her story, and what made you kind of want to share it with the world?
Yeah, I got really lucky. I think I always say it's luck, but uh-huh, I think it's maybe more than that, or,
sure,
or something else. So I was researching, I was trying to find a topic for my next book, and mm-hmm, I had all these great ideas, and they all got rejected,
mm-hmm,
all of them. And I thought they were fantastic ideas, but, you know, what do I know? And so I was looking at, you know, I wanted to write something maybe about crime and kidnapping and all, and, you know, where it started, you know, where we kind of started thinking of it in terms of mass media,
mm-hmm,
in America. And I started researching this crime gang called the Black Hand.
Right.
And they were really, really horrible.
Mm-hmm.
They operated around New York, but they were also kind of really cool in, mm-hmm, like a crimey way.
Right.
And I was looking at all these old newspapers, and I, you know, was looking for articles on them, and I found one. It was okay. And I'm just like clicking through the pages, because, mm-hmm, you click through them now.
Right.
And then I saw this article. It says, with this illustration of this woman, like, you know, her head in her hand, like she was thinking really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And the headline was, Mrs. Sherlock Holmes Solves Crime Again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't know who, and I love Sherlock Holmes. And, right, I said, I don't know who Mrs. Sherlock Holmes is.
Yeah.
I don't know who she, I want to know more. And I read this article, and it was amazing,
mm-hmm,
that she had done all these things. And there I knew that there had to be more.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wondered, you know, why has she disappeared, someone so important. So that kind of got me going.
I love the idea that you did the equivalent of like what I would consider like a Wikipedia down the rabbit hole situation.
Oh, totally. And, yeah,
and you ended up getting a book out of it, whereas like my Wikipedia rabbit holes, I'll end up at like 1970s wrestlers, or like,
oh, yeah,
or like old WWE like matches that I forgot about when I was like 7 or 8 years old. So nothing has ever come out of my rabbit hole, so I'm very jealous about that.
But no, but it's for every rabbit hole that works,
yeah,
there's an infinite amount that don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm doing the, I go down the wrestling rabbit holes,
mm-hmm,
you know, and you see what works, and then there's always the next step, you know, you see there's always the kind of icy hand clutching your heart,
yeah,
step, where you're like, well, somebody must have written a book about her.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked, and there were a few articles,
yeah,
and, you know, a couple journal entries and, mm-hmm, stuff, but nobody had ever written a book.
Yeah.
So,
and what do you think it is about her story that, it, because it is so fantastic and amazing, what do you think it is about her story that, like, is it because she's a female during this time, you know, when was kind of frowned upon to be in this business? What do you think it is about her story that it wasn't well known at all? Or at least it isn't, you know, around our times.
Yeah, no, I think that's the distinction, because she was, I think, you know, just based on the newspapers,
mm-hmm,
when she was in her heyday, she,
right,
was the most well-known female detective,
mm-hmm,
in America.
Yeah.
But the difference, like you said, is really striking, is now we know nothing about her.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you know, she was famous too, but she was also the first female U.S. district attorney,
right,
which is huge.
Yeah.
And nobody knows that. So I think it's a lot of factors. I think her being a woman is absolutely,
mm-hmm,
a factor, but it's also, I think, that she was a successful,
yeah,
woman. If she had been a woman detective and she didn't solve any crimes, or she solved like 50%,
mm-hmm,
I don't think people would have cared.
Right.
But she solved the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And she made the men who didn't solve them look like fools.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of where it starts.
And is that something that kind of, you know, struck you as a reason to tell the story? Because actually, I've sat down with another author named Marie Benedict, and she kind of tells a similar story,
yeah.
but it's about Einstein's husband or Einstein's wife, and she actually calls it the right. other Einstein.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. She kind of said, like, look, I want to tell these stories of these women whose stories have never been told before. Was that kind of same thing you were thinking when you saw that there was no book? I mean, obviously, you said you were looking for your next book idea, but was it like, this is a story that needs to be told?
Absolutely. Because you look at the stuff, you kind of get inspired. You get inspired by the kind of things she did mm-hmm. in real life.
Yeah.
You know? And I think I hear this a lot from writers. You yeah. know, writers kind of sit around and write stuff. You know, we don't really do much, but we wish we could.
Right.
So I think there's something to finding someone and telling their story and bringing it, you know, to a large amount of people, mm-hmm. hopefully, you know, they can see it and see the same thing you saw.
Yeah.
You know, that not only, oh, it's a, you know, it's a real shame that she's been, you know, kind of lost to history, but wow, look at the great things she did. Right. And be inspired by it too.
Yeah. And so finding those, you know, all these great things that she did, it's a lazy interview question to ask you what your research process was like, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because I, you know, I've seen these stories about a lot of the stuff that she did was either the news or like the files were, you know, they disappeared whether by accident or on purpose. So what was that research process like for you? I imagine just lots of hours in libraries.
Not really. I wish it was mm-hmm. because normally that's my research process. You find out where the stuff is mm-hmm. and you go to it and you get your hands dirty. Mm-hmm. You just read all this stuff and it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's Indiana Jones for nerds. But
I think Indiana Jones can just be Indiana Jones for nerds. I'm a nerd. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Indiana Jones, that works.
That's but then he goes out to like
that, okay, that's
the
fair,
temple. Yeah.
That's true.
And he has a bullwhip. But it's
that too.
I may have a bullwhip, but I shouldn't have said that on the air.
That's okay.
There's
I have a hat like that. It's all right.
Yeah, that's true. That's good. Yeah. But with her, so that in most projects, that's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But with her, once I figured out, well, this would be a great story to tell. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe there's enough for a book. I don't know if there is. Maybe it's right. just an article, whatever.
Yeah.
I assumed because she was so famous, because she was this big lawyer, that she had, like, her papers were somewhere, mm-hmm. her letters, her correspondence, her court
right.
cases, and they were nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I looked for a year, and they were gone. So all the normal things I would use to tell a story weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point, I said, I can't tell the story. I don't know enough about it.
Right.
But then I started to think, you know, I looked at the main thing she focused on, her kind of mission in life, were these missing girl cases.
Right.
And I said, well, she's kind of like these girls she's trying to find. Mm-hmm. She's missing herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, that's how I can tell the story. Just tell it around her.
Yeah.
Talk about what's going on in the world. You know, talk about the cases
mm-hmm.
and start from there and kind of let the reader find out who she is. And the book itself, some people get kind of mad. They're like, well, I saw this on Goodreads the other day, which if you're an author, you should never read Goodreads.
I've been told.
Because it is so mean.
Right.
This is the first time I've been on it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't on it for the other book.
Yeah.
And it's meaner than Twitter. But someone wrote, well, I was very disappointed because I wanted a biography. And mm-hmm. this talks about all her cases.
Right.
And if you look at the book, it's not, it doesn't say biography on
yeah.
it. It's I think of it as a mystery.
Right.
But it's, you know, it was really different for me, but it was really fun because back to your question, because it forced me to go and look at all this really interesting stuff to get a picture of her mm-hmm. that I may not have initially, and it turned out way better, I mm-hmm. think. I really love how it turned out. It
yeah.
made me look at newspapers. I found all these weird court cases. Where it's kind of easy to go to the library and just use that,
mm-hmm.
you know, but this really opened things up.
Yeah. You mentioned that you don't really consider it a biography, and I've seen on, you know, the publisher's website before, they kind of call it a narrative biography, which I think is a nice way to kind of
put it. Oh, okay, yeah,
put it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's something that I think it's an interesting topic to kind of discuss, and something else that I think is really an interesting topic is something that I know you lecture on a little bit, which is, you know, comics and pop culture and things like that, and so much so that, like I said, the first book that you wrote was kind of a biography of the creators of Superman. So I kind of want to talk about that for a few minutes. You know, maybe, you know, where did that story come from? Or I guess, you know, why Superman would be just kind of a good place to start.
Kind of like the same thing. I mean, you find a story that you know hasn't been told to the best of, you know, really thoroughly, and you want to read it, and you go to read it, and it's not there. So you think, well, maybe I should write. Well, that sounds really obnoxious. Like, oh, I'll just write it. But for me, it was that book was much more personal. I'm a lifetime Clevelander. You know, and my dad used to drive my brother and I around Cleveland and, you know, tell us, like, regale us with these tales of Cleveland. We were from the suburbs, and Cleveland looked like it just exploded, you know? Like, it was half falling apart. It's like Krypton. And he would tell us, well, you know, Superman was created in Cleveland. And that was the one thing I just could not believe. I said, no way. I'm like, no way, because it's Cleveland. You know, and when you're from Cleveland, you can make fun of it. And but that always stuck with me. And so, you know, once I realized it was true, and I loved, you know, comics my whole life, it just wouldn't go away because I wanted to know how they did it. I didn't really just want to tell the story of their lives. I think that's interesting. I wanted to know, you know, it's like this philosopher's stone of how do you create the first superhero? Because it's so crazy when you think about it. So, yeah, it was just from all those things kind of coming together as one.
And so you mentioned, you know, comics being something that's been a part of your life for, you know, a really long time. And like you said, we're both from Cleveland, and so Superman is a point of pride with us here. You know, when you land in our airport, we have, you know, the giant Superman there. What were some of the comics that you read when you were a kid?
I didn't read Superman.
Okay.
I thought Superman was really, like, not cool. I mean, that being said, you have to love Superman. Like, every comics person, even if you don't like Superman, you love Superman. You know, because he's the best. He's the first. But the comics where I was growing up were kind of lame. The Superman ones, I read X-Men. X-Men was my, in the 80s. It was, you know, it was teenagers with powers. I mean, it was just, that was it for me. But then you come around and you start reading some of the old Superman stuff, and you're like, wow, that stuff's really awesome, and some of the other stuff. So,
And so something that I am kind of fascinated by is this, like, explosion of popularity with comics over the past, you know, whatever it's been, 10, 15 years or so. It hasn't always been that way. So what do you think it is with kind of society? Like, why do you think there's this, like, and not just the, you know, the people who have always read it. Comics have always been popular, but not, like, in the forefront. What do you think it is that had that, you know, what kind of made that finally happen?
That's a great question, because when I grew up, I had to keep, you know, comics, and I had to keep it a secret, but you couldn't be seen with a comic. It was so nerdy. It was so, like, hands off. That you had to, like, hide it in, you know, in another book. Or it was just, you know, but you were reading it and you just, it was so good that you just wanted everybody to see how good it was. And what I think happened, this is totally just a theory. What I think happened is all those nerds like me who grew up in the 80s, some of them took that love of these comics to Hollywood, to stories. And then you get people like Josh Whedon and all these others that say, you know, we need to make a movie about this or make a movie like this, make a TV story. Like, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer had all these comics references in it, you know, and then he goes and makes a comic. So I think that's part of it. But it's also, you know, I think society was more, you know, ready for it. You know, there's different parts when you look at the history of when comics are popular. You know, if we go through, you know, something like a war or something like 9/11, you know, then it kind of spikes afterwards. So we, like, want this fantasy and stuff.
I wonder if it has something to do, too, with, like, with the rise of technology and, like, I don't want to say that, like, you know, smart, you know, obviously smart people have always, you know, done really well, like, businesses and things like that, but with, like, you know, social media and, you know, people who have an ability to code, all of a sudden it's such an important thing, and, you know, a lot of their, you know, interests do lie in the same the same realm as people who read comics, and so all of a sudden you see these incredibly successful people who are in the spotlight now, and they are, you know, they kind of have that quote-unquote, like, nerd culture in their background. And that, and, like, when you mentioned the movies and, you know, like, Josh Whedon and things like that, I mean, there were terrible versions of comic book movies when we were younger.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I think a lot of, you know, putting money towards those movies. You know, like I remember when I was young and seeing like Masters of the Universe. Not a good movie. Not a good movie, but it would exist. Wow, it just wasn't, or like Flash Gordon, just like cheesy. Whereas now, you know, they're putting a lot of money into it. Anyway, I am a fellow nerd, so this is kind of something I can talk. Actually, there is something something I want to talk to you about. So my father-in-law, through complete happenstance, I didn't know this when I married his daughter, but he has gone to Comic-Con for like 30 years. He buys and sells comic book art. That's what he does for a living.
Really?
Yeah, and I know that you've been to Comic-Con. You've done some talks there, right?
Yeah.
So what were your talks on while you were at Comic-Con? This is mainly me just being a fellow nerd and wanting to pick your brain.
Yeah, I got to find out who your father was.
I'll give you that as soon as we're done.
Going to Comic was like always, that's like the thing it's like the mecca of nerds. And then, you know, I got to talk there, and it was like, I was super nervous, but it was great. I mean, the people are so nice, and there's so many smart people there. Mm-hmm. And just like you said, I think you really have them with the technology. There's so many smart, creative, interesting people that I think in decades past, we've kind of just put off in a corner.
Right.
And here now it's celebrated partly because, you know, they have the jobs. Yeah. You know, they're making all the money. But Comic-Con's awesome. But yeah, I just talk about, like, I tend to talk about a lot of Superman stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, comics history stuff. But it's awesome. It's overwhelming. But it's crazy.
I just think of how far, like, kind of like nerd culture stuff has come when you think about, you know, Stranger Things on Netflix was one of, like, the biggest things, you know, of the last year. And the, you know, the main characters are these kids who, you know, they read comics, they play Dungeons and Dragons, you know, the beginning of the series. And it just makes me so happy that, you know, those, you know, people, you can kind of like whatever you like, and it gets you know, a lot of attention these days and things like that. So I have to ask, if there was a comic that you could turn into a movie that you haven't yet seen, because I know everything's getting a movie these days, so what would you pick?
My favorite comic of all time is an X-Men graphic novel called God Loves, Man Kills. And it came out in the 80s, and Marvel kind of slipped it through, and everyone should go read it, because everyone says, oh, Watchmen, and, you know, the Dark Knight Returns. I think it's better. And kids read it, but it was so not for kids. and it was like the ultimate in subterfuge that Marvel got this to all these kids who loved X-Men.
Yeah.
And they read this, and it just, like, you know, stamped itself on their consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal. I don't want to, like, give it away.
Okay.
But they kind of did part of it for the second X-Men movie. Except they took all of the religion out of it.
Okay.
It's all about, you know, evangelicals and I don't know.
Yeah.
But that, I think, would be the one. But at the same time, it's like your favorite book, you know.
Yeah.
There's no movie that can ever be good.
That's true.
So maybe no.
Well, I will say with the
What's
X-Men,
yours?
Oh, man, that's such a good question. Originally, see, I am torn because I want to see, they're working on supposedly a Gambit movie.
Okay.
I would love to see a Gambit movie, but at the same time, there's so many X-Men movies. That's why I was laughing when you picked an X-Men story, because it's like, well, the way that they have their timelines all screwy in the movies, they could probably do the movie anyway and just say like, oh, it was a prequel to the last one, but I would like to see a good Gambit movie, I think, but I don't know if that'll ever happen. So I'm on the same area.
I also think I don't know how they can screw up and not have a great Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah, it's like they're going out of their way to make
it bad. And that's the easiest one to do.
Yeah.
Every kid knows it.
Yeah.
That would make $1 zillion.
Well, and so one of the things, every time I'll watch a movie with my wife, and which is basically every weekend, I will then go to like the IMDb and I'll do research on the movie, just because huge nerd, other than all the backgrounds of it. And so the most recent Fantastic Four, I guess they actually had a really good full plot, and there was the movie itself was going to end with this amazing fight scene, and there was going to be, It was going to be expensive, and yeah. they slashed at the last minute. The studio slashed their budget by like $40 million.
Wow!
And so that's why the third act of that last one is just disjointed.
Yeah, yeah.
and
yeah.
that's why. And I'm just sitting like, how do they not know this is going to happen again? But yeah, I don't know. There's so much to work with the Fantastic Four. Do you have like? Do you kind of still collect comics, or did you ever? And do you have kind of something in your own collection that you're most proud of?
That's a good question. Nobody's ever asked me that. Yeah, no, I totally still collect comics, even though I'm running out of room. I don't know what's... I think the ones... I mean, I've started to get, like, you know, older comics, but in some that are worth something, you know. But the ones that are worth the most to me are ones that I had as a kid.
Right.
You know, and that like, like the Wolverine limited series. And it's not in perfect condition, but it's the one that I like got off the racks and it just like converted me.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff when I come across it, you know, I'll be like, wow, that's really cool that I still have that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, I have a, I don't know what would be, I'd have to think about it. Nothing like too crazy. I don't have like Action Comics 1 or something like that. I can't afford that. That'd be nice.
Yeah, but... I was going to say, if you had that, you'd probably be talking to someone way more important than me.
Yeah, no. I have like a lot of 70s and 80s and some 60s like Kirby stuff. That's cool, but yeah.
Have you ever thought about like trying to take a comic book story or anything and making it into a novel or a graphic novel, anything like that?
Like doing a comic story?
Yeah, or maybe just taking like an existing universe and kind of telling your own story in it, something like that.
I'm starting to work, I have a project, a comics project, sort of working on. Yeah. But yeah, that with the other universes, that's tough. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd probably do it if they'd ask me, you know, but I don't think they're going to ask me.
Yeah.
But I've heard that's really tough work.
Yeah.
You know, those people I respect a lot. They have to, they are under a lot of pressure to do stuff quickly.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about comics. It's art that it's so American that it has to be cranked out, but it still comes out on paper.
Right.
And it's visual and it's has a story.
Yeah.
And there's just nothing like it.
Yeah. And then kinda awkward transitioning back to, you know, kind of Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Were there any other kind of like real life stories that you've seen or you're thinking about writing about or any stories that you're kind of currently kicking around that you can talk about or those types of things you need to sort of wait on?
I'm looking. I'm in the process. I had one, again, that I thought was really awesome, but it got shut down in 15 minutes after I worked on it for about 6 months.
Oh.
So this stuff happens a lot, as writers know, and everybody knows.
Yeah.
So you just got to keep trying. But I have about, I'm working on, I have a bunch of ideas at this point. I think it's just figuring out what one I want to do.
Yeah.
Because you spend a lot of time with these stories and these people. I mean, you have to find out if there's enough story there, if it's a good story, and if you want to spend time to, you know, devote your life to it for a couple years or whatever. So I'm trying to, you know, no pressure there.
Yeah.
but I have a couple good ones, I think. Yeah. I don't know.
And then, so you mentioned something about, you know, kind of telling the full story. Something that always blows my mind when I talk to authors is their ability to just take edits from their editor in stride. Like, I had an author tell me that one of the editors cut, like, 100,000 words from one of their books. And she was just like, yeah, that's just the nature of the beast. Like, do you ever, like, when you're writing these stories, do you ever put things in there and then your editor tells you, like, all right, X, Y, and Z needs to get scratched? And it's just kind of, like, heartbreaking. Like, you... For me, I feel like I would see the amount of hours that took me to write those chapters as opposed to, like, the actual stories that were being pulled. So, just, do you ever get used to that as a writer?
I think I have to, because I'm a writing teacher.
Yeah.
And I do it to my students. And I say, you know, you have to accept it. Well, not like that. You must accept it. But it's a necessary thing. And they do it with themselves too, you know, so they'll trade papers. And,
right.
I mean, that's a necessary part of editing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really valuable because someone can come along and just cut out your whole first paragraph and then you say, oh my gosh, it's so much better.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the same time, nobody likes to see their stuff cut. But I've been really... my editor, I edited another D in there, is really... he's really... I mean, I kind of get... I don't know the word. I kind of get busted more on the copy editing side. You know, why are you putting commas here? And they just, they get it all over me. But, you know, but with this book in particular, Mrs. Sherlock Holmes is a really strange book. Really strange. And I really wanted to make it strange because I didn't, I had no interest in doing a, just a, you know, she was born here and she died here. Because this is a mystery. And mysteries work, you know, across time and back and forth. And like the way a detective's mind does. They think about, you know, cases from the past. So I really made it weird. And I was sure he was going to say, you know, you've got to put this in order. But he said it was great. And the ending was is even weirder. But I'm really happy that they didn't make me change it. Really, I mean, some people don't like it, but I like it. So that's all
that matters.
But on the other side, like they, you know, they... title the books. I have this like 50 word subtitle that I, you know, I didn't pick that. I didn't want a subtitle. But they write all that, you know, and I say I hate this, but they say, well, you know, good luck hating it. You know? So you just have to, you know, you never get, never lose sight of the point that you're in this really, really lucky position to be writing and people are reading it, and you know, if somebody says, well, you know, take out that sentence, it's gone. You know,
that's fair,
unless it's a really important sentence.
Of course. So towards the end of our podcast, we do what we call the Nerd Nine. That is nine rapid fire questions. Also because we love alliteration. I'm also going to preface, we always say rapid fire and then they never end up being that way. So in theory, they're supposed to be quick and then they never are. So the first one is, what's the last book you finished?
Last book I finished was, it's still on my, I'm blanking. You were right. It's right on my, what is the, Warren Ellis, Normal.
What's your favorite place to read?
Bed.
Do you have a guilty pleasure?
Comics.
That's fair. What's one place you'd like to travel that you have not yet been to?
Egypt.
Do you have a favorite holiday?
Halloween.
Are you a coffee or tea person?
Coffee.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Favorite food?
Lasagna.
And then if you could have dinner with one person dead or alive, who would you pick?
Oh, that's impossible, but that's like the one everyone asks. See, I was good. I was rapid.
That was real. That was the quickest that the other ones had.
I should have.
You did those so fast that I don't even mind that you're stalling right now for the last one.
It's so hard.
I know. See, I always tell people Dr. Seuss or Jim Henson. Those are my, those are the two, which is cheating because I take two.
I would never pick those because I wanted to, I would totally pick those, but I wanted to write books on both those guys. And the same guy picked those guys.
Brian J. Jones.
And he's a super nice guy.
Yeah.
But he picked them like a month before. Same with George Lucas. The dinner question, my dad.
That's perfect. So last question for you. What do you hope readers take away from reading Mrs. Sherlock Holmes?
That one person... This is going to sound really cliche, but that one person can make a difference. That what you meet with her is someone who stops at nothing. And there's walls put up against her from all sides, but she doesn't stop. And it's in that way, she's very similar to the Superman guys. She doesn't give up, and she fights for what's right. And I think that's really important.
That's perfect, Brad. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's fun.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from Overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.